all bad things. Tragedy.
Tragedies, disasters. Bad things.
Trigger warning for everything possible.
What?
Meow. I'm Rachel.
And I'm David.
And this is All Bad Things.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome.
You can follow us on Insta.
You can follow us on all the socials.
Facebook. Yes. TikTok, Twitch, Blue Sky Threads, at All Bad Things Pod. Email us allbadthingspod@gmail.com. Join our Facebook discussion group, our subreddit, and our Discord. We still send scripts.
We do.
Anybody wants them.
So do all those things.
Right now, at yes. once.
In succession.
Mm-hmm. Ha, do you want to try this kombucha?
What do we got here?
This peach is peach. Paradise. Oh. It's actually not very sour at all.
Okay, let's see.
I think you might like it.
It's not bad. It's still just, I just can't do it.
Does it still taste sour to you or like bitter or whatever?
It doesn't necessarily taste sour. It just doesn't taste good.
Okay.
So, whatever
so
that
just
is.
Not a kombucha person.
No. I mean, and at this point I've tried it enough and I think it's just going to stay that way.
Even at the place down the road? Have you ever had their kombucha, the brewery?
I don't think so.
Might try that. See if you like it.
I've tried with kombucha. Mm-hmm. I tried with lamb. I had like four different.
That's because something completely different.
Yes, but I've had like four different. But it's in terms of trying something, gotcha. Trying to like it,
trying it multiple times.
Yeah.
What did I don't know that I ever had lamb.
Lamb is just
I was
it's just
vegan.
Really kind of gamey.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like to me, yeah. Like too gamey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like venison is fine. Like okay. I've had venison enough. Where
that's
it's,
deer.
Hmm?
Okay.
Especially venison jerky. Love that.
Mm. Does that taste gamey?
Not really, because it's going through such a process.
Huh, okay.
A friend of mine's dad used to make it, and unfortunately he passed, well, so did my friend. They've both since passed away, so I'll never have his,
that was a very sad story, as it
I'll never
out.
Have his venison jerky again.
Oh, no.
It was so damn good.
Oh.
But yeah, lamb, I've had breck of lamb, I've had lamb chops, mm-hmm. I've had a lamb stew.
Okay.
And just all of it, and I was just like, eh.
Just not
it's
for
just
you.
Not a, just,
so
just
lamb
not
and
lamb.
Kombucha.
Lamb and kombucha. If I go to a wedding and they're serving lamb and kombucha, I'm just going to leave. And with the next generation of my cousins coming up, there might be a lamb and kombucha wedding. Who knows?
That would be such an interesting theme. Lamb and kombucha.
Yes.
But I guess maybe. Huh, it's been a minute since we've recorded.
It has been.
We kind of.
Now everybody knows like two of my things that I just don't have a tendency for.
Good to know.
You're welcome. I know you wanted
know.
That knowledge. Oh, and the person I bet on for the Masters, it's working out so far. We'll see.
Colin Morikawa. Okay.
Which now that I was thinking of somebody else. Now that I've seen him play today, they did a whole thing on him on mm-hmm. the first season of Full Swing.
Yep.
So
yep. Yes,
he is currently tied for the lead.
Okay. I do recommend that, by the way, Rachel's Netflix recommendation corner. I very much enjoyed Full Swing, even though I don't like golf at all. And as I told David, if they simply recorded all golf tournaments in documentary style, edited it to be compelling, and then put it on Netflix, I would 100% watch it.
Meanwhile,
but live golf is so
meanwhile,
boring.
The rest of the world wants to follow it as it's going on.
But it's so boring.
Well, I mean,
and it's confusing. They keep like popping from
yes,
hole to hole.
Because on the weekend, the guys that make there's 110 guys still playing. So yeah, the camera's going to be all over the place. They literally have a camera crew on every single hole, and they have uh-huh. a camera crew like on the practice green. And on the, you know...
Do they make them not tee off until...
Well, the tee-offs are... The tee times are staggered. So that, you know... And sometimes, like... I don't know if I brought this up to you before while we were watching it, but mm-hmm. do you know what a shotgun start is? Do you know what that means?
I can literally only think of somebody actually, like, shooting a flare gun or something, the starter's pistol.
What it means in golf is that you would have 18 different pairings starting on 18 different holes. So
okay.
you could be starting on the 16th hole.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And just mm-hmm. you're coming back around, you're going to finish
yes,
on
we
15.
You mentioned
yeah.
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I mean, this, Yeah, but at least you have some knowledge of golf now, which is nice.
I know more about the golfers.
Yes, you do.
And like their personal emotional states than I do their actual golf game.
Next time mom's in town, you know, because she loves to watch the tour, as they call it.
Uh-huh.
So you can just sit there. She can commentate about the actual golf and you can commentate about the players. You're like, oh, like he's with Adidas. And
Tony Finau, I know he's a Jehovah's Witness. No, he's Mormon.
Scheffler is the Jehovah's Witness.
No, right. He's Mormon. Tony Finau is Mormon.
Okay.
From Salt Lake. Big family. Those were the two giveaways. I think
Scheffler was Mormon, too.
Really?
Somebody was a...
Jehovah's Witness?
Yeah.
I think I got that wrong. I think I was mixing up my JWs and my Mormons.
Well, it happens.
But anyway. Well, that was a fun intro for everybody.
Anywho,
My
master's bet is looking good so far. Put down $4. Like potentially, I'm going to win $23 and change.
Well, there we go.
So
there we go. And remember, kids, report your gambling winnings on your taxes. They're taxable. Anyway,
I was not going to back up that statement in any sense.
You know, I'm making you report it. Yes, of course. So we're clearly a little out of practice, but back we go with a listener script. Because I still haven't gotten back in the swing of research yet, somehow. But school is so close to being done, and I'm hoping that that means that I will do more. But anyway, in the meantime, we always have Stephen.
Yes, we do.
So thank you, Stephen. And many others. Yes. But specifically today, we're back to a Stephen script. And, sorry, I think I'm all coffee because I was down in our crawl space.
You kicked up a lot of pollen and stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. The only other people in history that have said it's good that we have a Steven were early 90s action film directors because they had Steven Seagal.
There you go.
That sentence has not been said since then.
Okay. So yes, this is a script by Steven. And also we had this topic suggested to us by, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Aimar.
Probably not.
E-I-M-E-A-R.
Okay.
Aimar?
Aimar? Sure.
I apologize if I butchered your name 6 ways from Sunday, but
I think literally dragged it through, yes, through a ditch.
Every possible iteration.
That's what you did.
This is the story of the wreck of the Essex.
Oh, okay.
So, from Stephen, most of the information on whaling is from a talk on YouTube by the Nantucket Whaling Museum. What? Just because whaling came out of left field there for you?
No, it was... Anyway.
Oh, just inside joke with yourself?
No. Okay. It's something we were talking about.
Okay. Anyway. As far as the whaling ship Essex is concerned, I have researched many sources that contradict each other. I have used first mate Owen Chase's account in this podcast. He is a first-hand account, so I've decided that his account is the most accurate. That's a good guess.
First-hand is...
primary source.
Yeah, although we know with like people being on the scene and like as studies, like even if you're witnessing something firsthand, the amount of details you're going to get wrong because your brain is scrambling a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Chase's account is a hard read as it was written not long after his rescue, and at times it is hard to understand exactly what he is saying. So if he was kind of discombobulated, I guess. All right, so worst cruise ever? The wreck of the Essex. That's what Stephen called it here. First of all, this is a trigger warning. Ooh, this story includes animal cruelty on a huge scale and cannibalism.
Okay. That's talk about a twofer.
And we can go ahead and start our timers for anyone who's waiting for David to make an Alive reference.
Oh, okay. I don't do those anymore because I don't like to fly anymore.
The ramming by a sperm whale of the whaling ship Essex is said to be the inspiration for the story of...
Moby Dick.
You got it.
Although I never read it. Did you ever read it?
I think I did.
Did you?
My dad loves that book.
Yeah, I never read
Herman Melville, I think, is the author.
I just know I looked at the notes. What were they called back in the day? Just the...
Cliff Notes.
Yes, thank you.
Spark Notes is another one, yeah.
So I just know...
like the broad
secondhand, the story. Yeah. But But yeah, it's...
I read it years ago. I was probably a preteen or teenager. My dad loves it. He says it's a great story. I mean, it is a classic, right? Sure. So, but he likes that and Old Man and the Sea. I found them both incredibly boring.
Old Man and the Sea. Okay.
Hemingway.
Oh, sure.
But, okay.
Never read any Hemingway either.
But you have... Oh, those are your, grandpa's?
Uncles.
Uncles. Mm-hmm. Hemingway, yeah. I was like, I'm just pointing up to the shelf because I'm like, it says Hemingway right there. Yeah,
that's why we need to YouTube our next so people can see
when we're pointing up to
where
we're
pointing at, even though the camera won't be able to catch it.
That's my little classics section right there. We have To Kill a Mockingbird. I think that's
mine.
Salinger. There's a Salinger book.
Yeah, Catcher
that's
in the
yours.
Rye.
Yeah. Yep. Two, I think For Whom the Bell Tolls, yep, and something else by Hemingway. And then All the King's Men. And then right after that is So Others May Live and Molly's Song by, yes, Lee Hutch. New classics.
I was just
going
to say, soon to be classics.
Yes. All right, so back to The Wreck of the Essex and the inspiration for Moby Dick. Though this is the most well-known case, at least three other incidents involving whale attacks have been recorded since. The Pocahontas was attacked in 1850, and the sailing ship Anne Alexander was rammed a year later. The whaling ship Kathleen was attacked in 1902. All these ships were attacked while they were whaling, and each time it was a sperm whale that was involved. I'm not going to knock a whale for trying to topple a whaling ship.
Let's see if he mentions it all or goes into it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to mention it briefly. Remember last year about this time, there was many incidents with orcas.
Being aggressive, right?
Yes, towards and sinking, yeah, some of them.
Huh.
So...
To be fair, I'm not sure how old this script is. It could have sat around in the mailbox for a while.
I'll let Stephen tell the story.
This is so interesting. Okay, when Herman Melville wrote Moby Dick, he mixed two different true events together. This next sentence is only going to be funny from a modern lens. He's not trying to be funny. The whale in his book is based on Mocha Dick, a male sperm whale. All I'm thinking of is a stripper.
We're all thinking of it. Yeah.
Okay, but this is back then. Dick
no,
was just
I was
a nickname
say,
for Richard.
Nobody knew back then. Mm-mm. There was a NASCAR driver. His name, and I'm not even joking. His name was Dick Trickle. Look that up.
Oh,
well,
boy.
Or don't. Probably don't. Other things are going to pop up than the NASCAR, former NASCAR guy.
But can you imagine if just, like, say...
I just don't know how Dick was ever, like, fashionable as somebody's name.
But imagine.
And I have an Uncle Dick, and I want to ask him, like,
right?
Why? Uh-huh. Like, why don't you just go with Richard?
Well, just imagine, like, say, okay, so an old-fashioned D nickname for Sarah is Sally.
Oh,
right?
Is
so, yeah. You believe it or not, that's what Sally is a nickname for, Sarah. It's
that.
No more efficient, but it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's say that, like, 50 years from now, Sally is suddenly, like, a dirty nickname for a body part or something. Then it's like, well, how did the language decide to change the rules? But it's also kind of annoying because it's like, how did language just completely flip,
like,
an innocent word?
Nobody can just
how
be,
it works.
Nobody can just be a dick anymore.
Back in my day, a man could be a dick without any
back
problem.
In my day, there were dicks all over the place.
You just made yourself laugh.
I did. But yeah, I've never, yeah, dick. Hey. Dick Jones. Oh, hello.
Right. Or the goat, Dick Van Dyke.
Right, yes. Richard Van Dyke.
Some accounts say that he... Okay, so... This sperm whale, Mocha Dick, survived over 100 encounters with whaling vessels before he was killed.
No shit, okay.
Because...
But how would they know that back then?
Well, so I think the idea was, and I guess they wouldn't know 100% for sure, but if I'm recalling correctly, the whole story of Moby Dick was that there was this one giant white whale, right?
Sure.
That Captain Ahab, mm-hmm, was...
White whale, holy grail.
Was after.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea would be that it was a very distinct animal for its species, right? So maybe it was white, maybe, I don't know, well, distinctly colored. It could have been albino. I don't know much about sperm whales.
There are distinct species just merely existing today. There's nothing else like it.
But yeah, white one. If they appeared different or maybe had like a distinctive scar or something, I don't know. Well, maybe Stephen will go into it.
If it was a white whale, it was probably pretty easy to be like, oh, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
It's like machine hunting on Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to try not to laugh every time I say Mocha Dick, but I apologize if I do. Mocha Dick was known to retaliate after being attacked. He was known to dive deeply and then breach when he had been harpooned. So that could be, if he got harpooned a bunch, he could have a bunch of scars. Sure. And that could be how they knew that he got away so much.
And of course the thing is going to fight back. I mean, it's a gigantic animal.
100%.
And... yes, if it was being attacked by sharks or something like that, it would probably have the same reaction.
Right. He was killed in 1838 after coming to the aid of a cow whose calf had been killed. Aww. You know that they call female...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Female whales calves. Mm-hmm. Or cows and babies calves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The whale that attacked the Essex was not an albino like Mocha Dick, so that would be the distinctiveness of this whale. Is that it was albino, so, and was 20 feet longer than him. So this was not an albino whale that attacked the Essex, but and it was also a much larger whale, 20 feet longer. Commercial whaling began in Nantucket in 1690, and by 1820, it was big business. By this time, the local hunting grounds had been overfished, so whalers had to take bigger risks and longer trips to full up their ships. They had started with right whales and humpback whales as they were found near the American coast, but soon they changed to hunting sperm whales. The sperm whale was valued as a target because it contained a dense, waxy substance that burned brightly, but this was only one of the products made from whaling. Whale oil was not only used as lighting, it was used as a lubricant. Cooking oil, candles, soap, cosmetics, perfumes, corsets, and umbrellas, even the string and tennis rackets were made from whales. Demand exceeded supply, so whaling became more lucrative. I just remember did you ever see The Chipmunk's Great Adventure when you were a kid?
I don't believe I did.
I think that's what it was called. But, like, part of the plot was about, I think it was either... whales or seals they were killing for perfume. Like, okay. It was pretty dark, actually.
Nice. There you go.
Anyway.
You just asked me about chipmunks and we're talking about whales. That's just kind of...
Chipmunks are slightly smaller than whales, from my understanding. Yes. I do also know that, especially up north, like in Canada... some indigenous people have a long history of whaling.
For
sustenance. Mm-hmm. And whale blubber, dried whale blubber is a...
they use that fat for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a... And they didn't overfish like this bullshit.
No,
yeah.
They... Mm-hmm. Just like with the buffalo, they just needed one.
Right.
And that would get them...
And weren't being wasteful or trying to commodify.
They used all of it. Mm-hmm.
Life on a whale ship was hard. Yeah, Jesus.
Life on any ship.
Yeah.
Even modern day.
Yes.
If you've even watched, like, I was never a huge The Greatest Catch or what was that?
Mm-hmm. Is
that
Deadliest Catch?
Deadliest Catch. Mm-hmm. Never a huge fan, I've watched a couple episodes. I'm like, this shit's straight up fucking dangerous.
Yes. Yes, like, it is. Very much so.
Like, no wonder when these guys come home for like a week or 2 weeks before they they're just getting fucking wrecked the whole time because this could be their last chance to have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no guarantee you're coming fucking back.
Right.
Because that's the
Alaskan king crab fishers. Is that what Deadliest Catch is? Anyway, I know that is a dangerous profession.
It's just dangerous. Let's put it that way. So after having seen that, and that's with using modern day, you've got sonar, you've got this, you've got that, you've got all sorts of advantages.
Oh, yeah. You know, 150 years ago, almost 200 years ago.
And it's still fucking dangerous as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and back then, yeah.
Well, it started in 1690, so imagine whaling in 1690.
Your radar was like a dude all the way in the top mast, hoping he wouldn't...
Holding up his finger.
Right, just being like, thumbing it. and then there had to be somebody down that he could relay the hand signals to.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's
semaphore.
That's what they had back then. They literally had, like, a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hope he doesn't go overboard.
Right. The food started off unpleasant and became worse as the trip progressed.
Yeah, I mean,
greasy pork, molasses, and hardtack. I don't even want to know. Oh, he's going to tell us. Were the main source of sustenance. Hardtack, so it's literally spelled H-A-R-D-T-A-C-K. Hardtack.
Okay. Hardtack.
Is a biscuit made of flour and water. Which just sounds plain and is probably very basic. Hard. Yeah. Did you know that flour and water make paste?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can make a rudimentary paste. The baker, I learned that as a child. My parents taught me. And then I used to just glue pieces of paper together. Because it's like, well, I can make paste. The bakers used to make them as hard as possible to survive rough handling and time. It was baked 4 times, and hardtack could stay intact for years if it was kept dry. Biting into a dry biscuit could break a tooth.
Oh, God.
Hardtack was dunked into coffee or some other liquid, or it could be cooked on a skillet. So that's how it'd be softened. It sounds disgusting.
Yes, it does. But it's probably just like straight up sustenance.
Yeah, literally calories.
It's probably all it is.
Just energy, that's all.
Yeah.
Whaling was a dangerous business. Boys as young as 14 signed on for a chance to earn 0.5% share of the final take.
Good for them.
Good for them, because you know what? What's gone downhill in America today is that those youngins...
We need more 14-year-old whalers.
They're not working. They're not working and almost killing themselves for a half a percent of share of the final take.
Yes. Yeah.
Trips could take up to 3 years.
Jesus.
And the damp, cramped, cold, and dirty conditions made ideal conditions for sickness to take hold.
Oh, for sure. That too, yeah.
There was no place to shower or get clean.
And you're literally not jumping into the ocean because you'll die.
I don't like that.
Like, imagine being gone for 3 years. Gone to do anything.
Gone on a job.
Yeah.
And not to the point where, oh, I'll fly home on a weekend.
Like, I've gone the whole time.
You're literally just gone on the ocean for 3 years. Whaling was the kind of job...
I'm going to take a pass on that.
Yeah, that people who couldn't find jobs elsewhere took.
Of course.
Yeah. It was not uncommon for some of the crew to be ex-criminals. Whaling was seen as a good way to get a start in sailing ships. You would be expected to climb the masts could reach 10 stories high in all weather conditions to deal with the sails. Falls were a real risk.
Yeah, if you made it out alive, you literally had an advantage because many others did not.
Exactly. It sounds like this is how you work your way up in the industry sort of thing.
Just don't die.
Yeah.
And you'll make it.
The whale boats carried by the whale ship were manned by 6 people. The boats could be rowed out at about 5 miles an hour, and it might take 2 hours to reach the whale. The whale boat was rowed right up until it was actually touching the whale before the harpoon was pushed into the whale. Oof. Ugh. Once the harpoon had found its mark, the 1,500 feet of rope attached to both the harpoon and the boat would be played out as the whale raced away from the boat. Oh, yeah. Water had to be poured over the rope to stop it catching on fire, and there was a risk of a sailor getting caught in the rope and dragged into the water. That is still a risk. Like, you've got to be really careful with lines on boats. You know how I know that? Below deck. Because...
I was gonna say it's not from being in a boat.
No. One of the deck crew in an episode of Below Deck was on the deck, and he said later, he's like, this was completely my fault. He was standing like behind the rope. Yeah. The rope got wrapped around his ankle.
Just dragged
and
him.
Pulled him right into the water. A camera operator saw it and like dropped his camera and cut the rope.
Thankfully, the camera operator was like, oh, this is a reality show. I'm going to film somebody dying. Thankfully, he became a human.
Right.
He was much smarter
than that.
Jesus.
Well, I think on that show, too, like, they train the camera crew to be on a boat.
Everybody's...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just to be on the boat, you have to go through basic...
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of extra safety training and stuff. But anyway.
At the very least, just make sure there's enough life rafts for everybody.
The harpoon was too small to kill the whale outright.
God, so they had to keep hitting it.
Yeah, so the whale boat would be dragged along at high speed until until the whale tired out. Oh, yeah. So they're like bleeding it out. Yeah. Ooh. If the whale decided to dive, the only option was to cut the rope and start again. Wow. Once the whale was too tired to swim away, so a lance that was plunged just behind the flipper. Okay. Once the lance had torn an artery or a vital organ, it was important to get clear of the dying whale so that it didn't smash the boat as it died. Death for the whale would have been long and painful. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's literally just bleeding out.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying horrible. To hit an artery.
Yeah.
That's, oh.
That is cruel. Once the whale was dead, it needed to be towed back to the mothership. The whale had probably traveled quite a distance. Oh, yeah, because it had gone out. Rowing back, towing a 60-ton whale at 1 mile an hour was hard work, and the work was still not over. Oh, yeah, they don't even have motors.
No.
The whale still needed to be processed.
Yeah.
The blubber needed to be peeled off like you would peel an orange. It then needed to be boiled down to turn into oil. It could take 3 24-hour days to process a whale. It was smelly and bloody.
Oh, God.
They had to dig through the whale's intestines to get, I'm going to guess it's ambergris or ambergris. Ambergris was used in perfume to keep it fresh and was worth more than its weight in gold. Sometimes the smallest crew member had to climb into a dead whale's head to remove the oil held there. And you know that those were the 14-year-olds.
Yep. They're the ones that can fit.
We have a 14-year-old nephew. Can you imagine?
Crawl up inside that whale. Get some of that.
For the next three years of your life. Ambergris? Oh, my God.
I mean, it's...
This process had to be repeated over 50 times before a whale ship was ready to head back home. It doesn't take too much imagination to see why so many crews deserted the ship and why so many people gave up after their first voyage. I would give up during my first voyage. First day.
lucky for the whales, though, it was this difficult to take one down.
The fact that they overfished enough.
But look at the amount of resources it took to get just one whale. I know that this was going on
a lot. Correct. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I mean, that was kind of like one of the things that wound up saving them. It was such a chore. Yeah. After a while, legally, you just couldn't do it anymore.
Right, but they did manage to overfish, so they did pick out enough of them.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. But it is
really fucked up.
But whale blubber literally was used for fucking everything. Like, it was almost described there. It's used as a preservative. It's used as
candles, oil,
right? Yeah.
Perfume, preservative.
Yeah. Everything.
By 1819, the whaling ship Essex was well past her prime, but had been totally refitted and was one of the smaller whaling ships, just 88 feet long, probably shorter than the whales. She was known as a lucky ship. Captain George Pollen was only 29 years old, but he and his first mate, 23-year-old Owen Chase, had already led one successful trip. The Essex headed towards the west coast of South America with a crew of 21 on 12th of April, 1819. We're recording this on the 14th of April.
Yes, we are.
205 years later. the whaling expedition was expected to take... Oh, by the way, today is tax day. Today is tax day. If you have not filed your taxes, please do so. This is for the U.S. people. Or file your extension. Just file your extension. Worst case scenario. So you're okay. Just do it. Anyway, that was just a little tax PSA. You know.
Sure. Actually.
Anyway, the Essex had left, right? The whaling expedition was expected to take about 2.5 years. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going from Nantucket to the west coast of South America. Was the Suez Canal in place by then?
I'm not sure.
It's not the Suez Canal, is it? No, that's in... Wait, there's one in...
Oh, you're talking... I know what you're...
Is it the Suez?
No, it's not the
Suez
Canal.
That's in, like, the Middle East.
Yeah, but we...
Panama Canal. That's the one. Anyway.
By this time? No, I don't think so.
Well, then how are they going to get to the west coast of South America from Nantucket? They're going to go all the
fuck. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, never mind. Didn't think of that.
That might be the route they still go. I mean, you're just cutting through. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's...
Well, I would imagine they don't leave from Nantucket.
No.
But, well, I don't know. I do not know about the whaling industry today.
No. Well, it's non-existent.
Well, I guess it might depend on where...
Unless it's pirating, but, I mean, commercially, you can't, whaling is illegal, so.
I did one of those, you remember the adopt-a-whale things back in the day? Sure. I had one. I think my aunt gifted it to me.
Yeah.
His name was Spike or something.
Yeah, Spike the whale.
Yeah. Anyway, 2 days after leaving Nantucket, she was caught in a squall. Two whale boats were wrecked and another was damaged. Despite the damage to the ship and the boats, Captain Pollard decided... Pollard is the name. Captain Pollard decided to carry on with what equipment he had left and wait until they reached the Azores to make repairs. There were no whale boats available. But the Essex had some luck in Cape Verde Islands... when they came across the Archimedes that had run aground. They managed to barter for a single whale boat. It was old and leaky, but it brought the number of boats up to four. Whale boats were 28 feet long and were manned by six crew. As they had to get very close to the whales to catch them, four boats was barely enough, and if a boat got damaged beyond repair, they would have to abandon their hunt. The whales are so enormous. It's just... I've never seen a whale in person. I've never sailed anywhere.
Most people have not. But
you know, sometimes people will, like, if you've ever gone whale watching, there are plenty of people
that have not done that. And, yeah, the two of us being two of those people. Mm-hmm. But, no, I mean.
It'd be mildly terrifying because they're so big.
They are pretty big.
But.
They are quite literally the largest creature on Earth.
Yeah, I guess all told. I was going to say mammal, but...
No, there's nothing bigger than a whale on Earth.
That we know of. How big is Nessie?
We still haven't found out a way to get to center Earth or whatever the Godzilla thing.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I was almost going to say Middle Earth, but that's Lord of the Rings. That's a different novel.
Well, and if we've only explored like 5% of the ocean, who knows what's down there?
King Kong.
Yeah.
Or Godzilla.
Right. It took 2 months before... No, Kinky Dora.
Yes, Kinky Dora.
It took 2 months before the Essex caught their first whale. They decided that they needed to head around Cape Horn to see if the hunting would be better in the South Pacific. That's why they're taking so damn long. Once they neared Peru, they managed to catch 10 more whales. The Essex needed fresh food when they stopped in Ecuador... and one of the crew members deserted. Don't blame that person. Yeah. They're probably like, you know what? I don't care that I'm in Ecuador and my family's in Nantucket.
He's like, I started in the northeastern United States. I'm like 10,000 miles away from there now. Like, good luck trying to find me.
Right, like, I don't care. I don't care, I'm out. The Essex needed fresh food when they stopped in Ecuador. Oh, I already said that. This meant... that when the three whale boats were out catching whales, there were only two people left on board to sail the ship.
That's crazy.
They had one crew member deserted. It meant that only two crew members were left manning the Essex as three boats were needed to catch the whales, leaving just two people aboard the Essex left it dangerously undermanned, but Captain Pollard had no choice. The Essex sailed to Hood Island to catch 200 tortoises to be kept for fresh meat. These tortoises could live up to 1 year before they starved to death. Oh, so they took them alive.
Yeah.
Ooh. Once on board, the tortoises would neither eat or drink. Oh, that's horrible. Well, Stephen was right when he gave a trigger warning for animal cruelty. They headed to Charles Island to get even more, but the helmsman, Thomas Chappell, decided to play a prank. And started a fire that devastated the island and they had to abandon their tortoise hunt.
The fuck? Like,
Tom, the fuck are you doing there? What a shitty thing to do. This is believed to have contributed to the extinction of some species of the animals on the island.
I wouldn't doubt
it. That's awful.
I mean, yeah, because those species need the trees and everything for vegetation and...
Jesus. Like,
yeah.
After leaving the Galapagos Islands, they sailed a further 1,500 nautical miles.
Thanks, dickheads.
Yeah. Mocha dickheads.
Yes.
They sailed a further 1,500 nautical miles, and on November 20th, 1820, whales were spotted and three of the four whale boats were launched. First mate Owen Chase was in charge of one of the whale boats. It was damaged when one of the whales struck the whale boat with its tail after being harpooned. Mm. Chase had to stuff jackets into the hold to stop the boat from sinking. He then had to cut the line to the harpoon and return to the ship until repairs could be made. The other two whaleboats continued with the hunt and managed to harpoon a different whale, while a temporary repair was made by nailing a piece of canvas over the hole. While this was being done, a huge sperm whale was spotted close to the ship. It rammed the port side of the ship. There's no way to know if this was an accident or not. The ship was already sinking, and Chase had ordered the pumps to be manned before the 85-foot-long whale resurfaced and appeared stunned, but then it turned around and charged the damaged ship, smashing into the damaged bow before swimming off. Yeah, it could either just be thrashing around or be like, fuck you, I guess. The Essex remained afloat but was doomed. The whale was almost the same size as the ship. Yeah, I think he said it was 88 feet long, and the whale was 85. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's. So it was not surprising that the ship was driven backwards from the blow. Nobody was killed in the wreck. By cutting down the masts and rigging, the crew managed to keep the Essex afloat for 2 days, giving them time to get the three remaining whale boats equipped and rigged with makeshift sails. They built up this, I guess that's, if you have the whale boats, you kind of have built-in lifeboats a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They built up the sides of the boats to make them more seaworthy. First mate Owen Chase wrote later that he suspects the only reason anyone survived was because they spent the time working on the sides of the boat before they headed off. Barrels of water, some bread, and 600 pounds of hardtack were loaded onto the boats. Some of the giant tortoises were taken for meat. The wreck of the Essex was 1,200 miles away from the Marquesas Islands in French Polynesia. Wikipedia says the crew had heard rumors that the natives on the island were cannibals. Ooh, that's right, I forgot about the cannibal. Trigger warning. This was no longer true, but the crew had no way of knowing that. In Owen Chase's personal account, he says that the decision to head for South America was more due to it being storm season in the South Pacific. Food and water was rationed from the start. The bread was eaten first, but before long it was tainted by salt water.
Mm.
While eating the contaminated bread helped sustain the survivors, it made them more thirsty. Soon the water shortage became a big problem. Drinking urine, ugh, yeah, helped, but thirst soon became their main concern. Okay, so I loved that little red herring earlier about, like, there was the possibility that they were worried that they would go to islands where there were cannibals, and now I'm like, I think the cannibals, it's the call is for coming from inside the house, as it were, in this story. So the only fresh meat was the tortoises. Even the blood and the entrails were consumed. The boats were not designed for long voyages. Early on, the barrels of hardtack became, we already said that. Bailing had to be done in shifts and was almost continuous. Jeez. On one occasion, Captain Pollard's boat was damaged by a killer whale. The whale was driven off with a piece of wood. I can just picture them, like, whacking this giant whale with a 2x4.
You'd have no other choice, I guess.
Killer whales are much smaller, though, right?
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whale repairs had to be made as they continued sailing.
I think that's
sailing.
What they're mostly going after here, it seems like.
No, sperm whales, Stephen was saying.
Oh, I guess I missed that part.
Sperm whales and... I think that's the only one he mentioned by name.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Keeping the three boats together was a constant problem at night.
Of course.
Yeah. Supplies had been spread between all three boats, but the crew wanted to try and stay together. While they tried to collect water in the sails, the water collected was salty and could not be used. The darkness at night caused other problems. The crew could not see the waves as they buffeted the boats.
Yeah.
Mm. 1 month after the whale attack, they landed on Henderson Island. It was just 5 days before Christmas. The island is part of the Pitcairn Islands group. They were only 100 miles away from Pitcairn Island when they could have got help from the descendants of the HMS Bounty Mutineers. That's interesting. But the crew thought they were on Ducey Island, 357 miles away from help. Whalers were regular visits to Pitcairn Island, but Henderson Island was uninhabited. It was not until the next day that they found a small spring that was only exposed after half tide. The water was drinkable, but the water tasted brackish at first, but by waiting a while, the saltiness dissipated. At first, food seemed plentiful. There were birds and fish to catch, eggs to eat, and there was a kind of grass that tastes like lemon. By the time they had stayed a week, they were having trouble foraging for food. Three of the crew, Thomas Chapel, the firebug who devastated an island, Seth Weeks and William Wright, decided to stay and take their chances on the island. It was time to repair the boats and take their chances. Wow. The 17 other crew members took the three boats. Wow, can you imagine just being like, this has been so traumatic that I'm not leaving. I'm not going back on the sea.
Yes, I can.
And I can too, in this, come to think of it.
I mean, in this scenario, I can definitely. Who had to drink the tortoise blood? Like,
right.
Somebody did.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably some of the guys that they're like, you know what?
We're just going to stay here.
The South America thing, I got a feeling about it. You know? They're only cannibals that we know of, or... Maybe.
No, it's uninhabited, remember?
Oh, that's true.
Henderson Island.
Yes, just don't burn it to the ground. You'll be all right.
Yeah, that's a... Well, you got the one guy, so it's possible. The chances aren't zero that will happen. So the 17 other crew members left with the boats. They intended to head to Easter Island. The food they had gathered from Henderson Island ran out after 3 days. They still had a bit of hardtack, but before long, even that was gone. On January the 10th, second mate Matthew Joy was the first to die. The next day, the boat crewed by Richard Peterson, Isaac Cole, Benjamin Lawrence, Thomas Nickerson, and commanded by first mate Owen Chase, became separated from the other two boats. Accounts vary on the dates and order of the deaths, and exactly when they made the hard decision to turn to cannibalism. When Isaac Cole died, trigger warning, they separated his limbs from his body and cut all the flesh from the bones. They took out his heart and then sewed the body back up and committed it to the sea. They ate the heart first and cut the meat into strips and dried it in the sun. Some of the flesh started to putrefy, so they cooked and ate it while it was still edible. Thomas Nickerson, Benjamin Lawrence, and Thomas Chase were found drifting by the British whaling ship Indian. Captain William Crozier took them to Alejandro Selkirk Island in Chile. They were transferred to the USS Constellation. They told the authorities about the men stranded on Henderson Island, and the merchant vessel Surrey was sent to look for them. The two other boats remained together. On January the 14th, the boat crewed by William Bond, Joseph West, with Obed Hendricks in charge, ran out of food. Captain George Pollard shared the food from his boat between both remaining crews, but on January 21st, all the food had been eaten. Lawson Thomas had died the day before, and the survivors had decided to use his body for food. Charles Shorter died 2 days later, followed by Isaiah Shepherd 4 days after that. The 28th of January was a bad day. I just love that sentence. It was fine until then. But they had this one bad day.
We've already stripped several humans.
I think we've had some bad days.
Sewn them up and sent them back out to sea.
But let's see what happens.
let's talk about January 20th.
Trigger warning of the January 28th. Samuel Reed died that morning. And later in the day, the two boats became separated. Obed Hendricks, William Bond, and Joseph West were never seen again. It is suspected that a boat that washed up on Ducey Island containing three skeletons was theirs, but it has never been confirmed. Yeah. This is brutal.
Didn't have DNA testing back then.
Yeah, right? By the beginning of February, the boat commanded by Captain Pollard was out of food. It was decided amongst the men to draw lots to decide who would give up his life to save the others. Owen Coffin, Captain Pollard's first cousin, lost, and Charles Ramsdell was picked to be the executioner. Wow. Ray died 10 days later. That That got to a darker place than we've been in. Because all other such stories have been from natural deaths, right? Somebody dies of starvation.
This made it to Lord of the Flies territory.
Like, I mean,
almost exactly, just without the mutiny.
It sounds like they, I mean, I don't know how consensual it could be given the circumstances, but it sounded like they were all like, okay, draw straws here.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's grim.
That's cheery.
Captain Pollard and Charles Ramsdell were rescued by the Dolphin on 23rd of February. They were so close to death that they didn't even notice the ship pull alongside them and became terrified when their rescuers tried to help them. The Dolphin transferred them to a ship called the Two Brothers that took them to Valparaiso in Chile. The Surrey found Thomas Chappell, Seth Weeks, and William Wright on Henderson Island on April the 9th, 1821. They had survived for 3 months on fish, bird eggs, crabs, and peppergrass. So it turns out, I guess they were the smart ones. And also, Thomas didn't burn down the island.
He did not, which is why they got to have all the fish and the crabs.
I guess when you're starving, you're less of a prankster.
Yeah.
Oh my God, despite their ordeal, all the survivors went back to sea. I guess desperation is a hell of a drug. Captain Pollard commanded 2 more ships, but bad luck seemed to haunt him. The whaling ship, the Two Brothers, was wrecked in a storm off the coast of Hawaii.
Either bad luck or just the fact that this is like one of the most
terrible,
dangerous things you can fucking do.
Ever, like, in the history, like, of mankind.
Yes, even today.
Right?
Like, yeah, it's like being a test pilot. Like,
yeah, right?
At some point that test is going to fail. Like...
The whaling ship, so his next ship suffered from a similar fate. After that, he took the safer job as Nantucket's night watchman.
Yeah, do that.
He died in 1870, aged 73 years old. That's like old for what he went through.
Yeah, that's making it.
After he returned home, Owen Chase wrote about his experience in a book called The Narrative of the Most Extraordinary and Distressing Shipwreck of the Whale Ship Essex. Extraordinary and distressing is like... underplaying it by a bit.
Yeah, that's almost putting it like in a comical way.
Yeah, right. It is written in his own words and the language is very dated, but is well worth a read. Chase continued whaling and eventually built his own whale ship. He was married 4 times. I wonder what was the cause of his marriage problem.
Are you going away for another 2.5 years?
Oh, this is good. So 2 of his wives died when he was at sea, and he divorced the third after she gave birth to a child 16 months after he had been at sea.
Yeah.
Even that math was easy to do back then. The wreck of the Essex haunted his dreams, and later in his life, the disaster caught up with him, and he was institutionalized. You cannot outrun trauma.
And then, speaking of trauma, think about what being institutionalized...
Oh, in the 1800s?
Means.
Jesus.
I mean, Who knows?
Right. He died at age 73. Thomas Nickerson, the cabin boy, also wrote an account called The Loss of the Ship Essex, Sunk by a Whale, and the Ordeal of the Crew in Open Boats. He went the descriptive route.
Sure.
He went on to become a captain of a merchant ship. His account was not published until 1960, and he died aged 77.
Damn.
And that, my friends...
What a fucking crazy story.
Seriously, it was the story of the wreck of the Essex.
Yeah, okay.
Whew! That got grim. That got very, very grim.
really fast.
It did. It took a hard turn there. Yeah. It was like... Oh, that's right. There's the animal cruelty and the tortoises and the whales and there's the cannibalism, and then it went to they drew lots to see who was gonna die and be eaten. Oh my God.
That escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand.
Yeah, that's yeah,
Brick killed a guy. But I'm never going to be a fisherman in any lifetime or at any period of time. Even if it's like 500 years from now, it'll still be fucking dangerous.
Yes, absolutely, right? Yeah,
when all of the earth will just be ocean.
Yeah.
It'll be like that Kevin Costner movie.
Waterworld.
Waterworld. Yeah.
You mean that Tina Margarino movie.
Sure.
Waterworld, yeah. Actually, I wouldn't put that on Tina, because that was like a bomb of a movie, wasn't it?
No, I just think it was expensive to make.
And it didn't do well.
And it didn't make back its money.
And it was also considered not a great movie, right?
Not really.
Because the secret is Kevin Costner's not a very good actor.
No, I mean, he is in a couple movies, but by then it was just like he could... And now he's made some sort of a comeback being a TV star. And it's just
Yellowstone, yes. Right? That's huge.
So it's
for
like...
people for some reason.
It's like, why won't Kevin Costner just go away? he's like, because I've got to make Yellowstone.
But you know what? This almost makes me want to read Moby Dick again.
I mean, I don't have the energy to read anything these days unless it's like an article. I don't know.
Book.
Sure, but I don't know, like, because I have read plenty of the classics, just for one whatever reason, like this just was not one of them. So.
Well, you can't read them all.
No, you can't read them all. But, I mean, imagine having to do any of this.
No. Like, I simply cannot.
Seriously.
Simply cannot.
I mean, I'm thinking about all the aesthetics, like the clothes that they're wearing. Like,
yeah.
Are they kind of wearing clothes? Like, they're not wearing, like, Under Armour gear and, like,
no.
And, like, shit that's, like, you know, like, it stretches
no.
real nice when I'm,
right.
when I'm trying to kill a whale.
No.
Like, no, they're wearing, like... fucking probably clothes that they made or whatever
were made for
barely tailored for them,
yeah,
like that's for a 14-year-old or that's for a 12-year-old boy. You're 14,
right?
Close enough.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, even though the shoulders don't fit anymore. But no, everything about civilization before, I don't know, like 1983, I just don't want any part of.
right it's like
I like the internet.
Yes.
I really enjoy it.
That's the thing. Like, I fully understand that
we are
living in, like, the downfall of all society. Yeah.
But it's kind of fun.
But the problem is that they had less technology when society was kind of moving along.
Yeah.
So...
they had to go on 2.5-year whale hunts and read books. And that's all they did. That's all you did in 1812.
Everything before 1983 was whale hunts and reading books. That's all life was, and no internet. So be glad you're here today.
And an occasional skin cancer, but you know. But anyway, everything about being a fisherman, being like making your living on the ocean, like fuck, no thanks.
It's just so. The ocean is so.
It's unforgiving.
Unforgiving, untamable.
Yep.
Impossible to be civilized. Like, by civilized, I mean, like, create a civilization,
yeah,
you know?
It's not happening.
It's almost like the ocean is sort of what keeps us as humans in check.
Well, it's like part of the balance, right?
It is,
like everything in our ecosystem has to have a balance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is the one area, and thankfully it makes up, like, most of the Earth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the one area, like, humans can't completely destroy, because even if they try to, we're just going to make more of it by everything melting.
Yeah, right?
So,
the ocean is the apex predator.
That's fucking pretty much. I mean, mm-hmm. really? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but honestly, people die on cruise ships. Falling
yes,
over
not
door,
often, but...
you know, and shit like that.
Oh yeah,
but that's a fucking it's a modern day cruise ship that is
right.
built
mm-hmm.
to. Imagine fucking taking a cruise, in whatever time period before like the 1900s
mm-hmm.
to get from, like the like mm-hmm. African coast to the North American coast. What that would entail, like not everybody's making it.
And another plug. Lee's book, Molly's Song, has a very descriptive portion about sailing from the UK to
yeah.
the US.
Yeah, it's dangerous
at a time when it was not fun to do so.
Yeah.
and beyond the danger, there was just the sicknesses and illnesses.
That was part of it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, dysentery and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
like whooping cough and like all that shit. Like when you're...
And the conditions, the living conditions.
When you're in unsanitary, closed quarters
mm-hmm.
with other humans,
mm-hmm.
like, fucking disease is just going to... It just
yes.
is.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because
we're just animals, ultimately.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, we are.
Well, just a cheery note to end.
Yeah, we're just animals. We're just a bunch of fucking animals, as Bad Omen says. But, yeah. So, that was the worst cruise ever.
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's in the conversation. The Wreck of the Essex. This has been another episode of All Bad Things. I'm David.
I'm Rachel.
We'll see you next week.